There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We are talking corporate governance on the Business Breakfast because cryptocurrencies are apparently triggering the biggest upheaval in corporate governance since, get this, the East India Company was formed in the 17th century. So says the Emirati businessman Fahim Al-Qasimi, and he's with us in the studio to defend his thesis. Fahim, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm very good indeed, thank you. We've also got with us a panel of experts to discuss this. First of all, Carla Coffle is a lawyer and executive director of the Pearl Initiative, an organization based here in the UAE, which looks at boosting standards of corporate governance. Carla, good to see you. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning.
And also Ziad Makhzoomi is with us, former CFO of the listed company Arabtech, also former CEO of Faki, a healthcare company that was sold to NMC for more than a billion dirhams. Very experienced businessman. Ziad, good morning. Lovely to have you.
Good morning.
Two. He holds up two fingers. There we go.
Not two fingers to you. It's 2 billion dirhams.
two billion dirhams. It was a very, very big deal. Fahim, let me start with you. You wrote a piece on entrepreneur.com last week talking about cryptocurrencies and the East India Company, and it piqued my interest. Just explain your thesis.
Richard, it's very simple. In our opinion as AQMP, who advise a lot of SMEs on corporate governance, the basic trifecta of governance has existed since the establishment of the first companies in the 17th century in Europe. You had participants that put their money together to build a ship. We call them the modern day shareholders. You have your board of governors that today we call the board of directors. And then you have the captain of the ship, who I call the CEO. If you go back and you were on the London Docklands in 1600 and somebody said to you, yes, we're going to India and we're going to trade, put your money towards the company, it would make a lot of sense. What cryptocurrency is the equivalent of is we're going to be trading in spice coin. Well, what is spice coin? We have no idea yet, but we promise it'll be of value one day. So my contention, our thesis at AQMP, is that the fundamental trifecta is being challenged today by the introduction of a new stakeholder. And that stakeholder today is the coin holder. And corporate governance is extremely important to make sure that the coin holder becomes part of the company's discussion. And my view is that that should happen at the board level. And we've been examining methods and practices that can help companies looking to raise money through ICOs to manage a very transparent corporate governance structure to protect the interests of the coin holder.
It's an interesting idea. It piqued my interest, but let's get a legal perspective on this. Carla Coffle, Executive Director of the Pearl Initiative. This is an organization that was created to, quote, take a lead in adopting higher standards in corporate governance, accountability, and transparency. You're an experienced lawyer, Carla. You were assistant counsel at general counsel at Sodexo, the 16 billion euro French food company. What do you think of this argument?
I think it raises a lot of issues that are affecting businesses around the world as well as within the Gulf region. Issues around what are the roles and responsibilities of different people within the organisation? What is the responsibility of the board in providing strategic direction? What is the role of the management in being able to then understand and respond to the various interests of stakeholders of the organisation? And the stakeholders are everybody from customers, from investors, to the employees. And then this raises the question of effectively a new stakeholder and how good corporate governance within an organisation can best respond to the uncertainties that this creates, as well as to be able to ensure that a business is successful now and into the future with these types of structures in place to help a business to remain current, to be innovative and ultimately remain profitable.
The members of your organisation, lots of big companies, local and international, the likes of GE, KPMG, Linklater, the law firm from international companies, Aramex, locally Bank of Sharjah, are any of them talking about this? Are they thinking about this issue of what cryptocurrencies could mean, this fourth if you like, type of a financial stakeholder in a company that we've never really come across before?
Yeah, so businesses, I think, everywhere are talking about the impact of digitization, the important role of the tech sector, and cryptocurrencies is a key part of that discussion around what is the impact of these changing influences for business. So within the context of then what is the disruption that's happening by digitization, how businesses respond to this, how boards become ready to be able to understand what the risks and opportunities are to digitization generally, but cryptocurrency specifically, is something which is a really hot issue for businesses everywhere.
So Ziad Makhzoomi, is someone with vast experience in business, I mean, those are just a couple of the appointments that you've held. CFO of ArabTech, multi-billion dollar listed company here in Dubai. You were the CEO of a company that sold to another listed company for about 2 billion dirhams, as you say, when NMC bought Faki. What do you think, first of all, of cryptocurrencies as a whole? And then we'll get on to Fahim's thesis about corporate governance in a second.
I mean, there's something, I mean, we start talking about. It used to be given something called a promissory note, which is a promise to give you some value at some time in the future. And I think that has developed over the time. We developed credit cards, and now you can buy things virtually online. So the whole world is going into a platform of virtual reality. Question is, how can we define that reality and what value to put on it? But more important is, how do we control it? Because if we don't know on what basis those valuations, because I've seen bitcoins going from few hundred to hundreds, tens of thousands, and this hype that you get, you know, buy, and I've never seen one. I've never seen anybody make money on it. And the issue is, how do you regulate it? When we developed the whole system of IBAN, where we can track movement of value and currencies, I want to know how we can do that in cryptocurrencies and who is the issuer of this. So there has to be some form of accountability if things don't materialize, which brings us to the issue of regulation and governance.
We've had a big ICO. I think arguably the world's biggest was a company that has strong ties to Dubai, Telegram, set up by Russian investors. But they say that their base is Dubai, and they raised well over a billion dollars through this ICO of theirs. And people put the money forward. As someone who's been a CFO and is still an advisor to listed companies, how do you approach this?
Well, I'll tell them don't, personally, to be quite honest. I mean, it's something I cannot control, I cannot quantify, I cannot regulate. And the recent disappearance of these currencies from certain exchanges tells me that there is no security, there is no control, there is no guidance or governance that somebody can say, okay, this is what went wrong, this is how we're going to do it next time and protect other people's investments. I mean, these are people's welfare, these are people's money, these are people's assets. And if you can't see it, you cannot define it, you cannot get a piece of document that you can physically present and say, you owe me this, I cannot see how it could be controlled.
Declan writes in saying, perhaps the more appropriate link for cryptocurrencies to the East India Company is what became known as the South Sea Bubble, when people kept expecting great rewards and riches, but it came to nothing. Declan, thanks very much indeed. We're talking corporate governance this morning. We have a panel of experts with us in the studio. First of all, Fahim Al-Qassimi, Emirati businessman and director of AQ&P. Fahim, good to see you. Thanks for staying with us.
Thank you.
We have Carla Koffel, the executive director of the Pearl Initiative, an organization here in the UAE aimed at boosting standards of corporate governance. Carla is a lawyer. Carla, good morning. Good to have you with us.
Good morning.
And finally, Ziad Makhzoomi, former CFO of ArabTech and former CEO of Faki, a company that was sold to NMC Healthcare for 2 billion dirhams. Ziad, I'm glad you're here. Thank you. Let's talk more broadly about corporate governance. Fahim, you were listening yesterday to our interview with His Excellency Abdulaziz Al Ghurair, who is the CEO of Mashreq Bank and, among other things, the head of the Family Business Council. And you picked up on his comments about corporate governance. What was it that he said that interested you and why?
I think from our perspective as AQ&P, Richard, we advise a lot of SMEs and help them understand that good governance is an incentive for them to one day exit at a higher valuation. The feedback I get from a lot of smaller family businesses is that corporate governance in family businesses is very, very different. What I appreciated about His Excellency's comments yesterday on the show was the fact that he highlighted the importance of good governance in family business. And Carla and I at the Pearl Initiative have spoken at length about how corporate governance, in our opinion, is even more important for family businesses when you're managing multiple stakeholders, when you're managing inheritance, when you're managing succession planning. So I think that His Excellency's comments were or came at a right time, where the UAE is looking at improving the corporate governance environment here.
Well, Ziad, I'm going to bring you in here, picking up on Faham's point about corporate governance can help you sell your business at a higher price. And I'm quoting an interview you did with The National about 6 years ago, back in 2013, when you were CEO of Faki IVF, when it was still an independent company. And you said, when that level of corporate maturity is reached, based on the highest standards of corporate governance, then the options for a full or partial exit is open. And I thought, yeah, that's Ziad banging on about corporate governance again. I know it's one of your pet subjects. You mentioned it twice in your LinkedIn profile. But then you sold Faki IVF for about 2 billion dirhams. And I thought, oh, maybe it's not just paying lip service to this. Maybe there's actually something in this corporate governance valuation thing. How important was good corporate governance in selling Faki IVF for such a high price?
Well, let me talk just about first about family businesses. I mean, family businesses, you have a founder, usually a patriarch, who will set up a business and get the children into the business, not necessarily for the right reasons. And this is why we've seen many family businesses probably not survive beyond the third generation. And we've seen it, even big families in Saudi Arabia and so on. So we need to have a system that will ensure continuity and have that vision and leadership that the person who created it, but also be open-minded in a sense that they can understand how the market is changing and the requirements are changing. For example, I remember the first time we came to Dubai was 85. There were very few banks. You didn't even have to prepare bank accounts for the company and so on. We didn't even have tax and VAT. We didn't have all sorts of things. So we're slowly getting into the right regulation because it's required to maintain the quality and continuity of the business. If you look at our businesses, I mean, family businesses are substantially the majority of our economy, any which way you look at it. Now, anybody investing in the business, so assume that the business is going fine and two, three generations do take over. Question is, when you want to sell it, an investor wants to ensure that the business is de-risked in a sense that the value does not disappear because the people are not there. And everything is obviously transparent and predictable up to a point. And this is why they do something like due diligence. Most of the time is not appropriately done because they don't understand the business. But if all these things are there, then it becomes easier to value and easier to appreciate and easier to continue and grow and easier to fit in with your own strategy. So governance becomes important in a sense. All the rules and regulations and the processes are there and easily detectable and understood.
Well, Carla, if I can bring you in, because some of the partners of the Pearl Initiative are big Gulf family firms. You've got the Zubair Corporation is in there. I think they're based in Oman. They're based out of Oman. Masrui's there. There are others in there as well. What are they getting right? The companies that do it right, what do they do?
Yeah, so we've done a couple of different studies looking specifically at family businesses. One was a survey back in 2014, followed up by a series of case studies to be looking at what makes family businesses successful, particularly considering the often poor statistics on the transition of wealth from one generation to the next. A couple of things that we found was the translation of family culture into a long-term corporate vision is very important, as well as then the efficient and fair engagement of multiple generations of the family. You know, the businesses that are really getting this right are investing a lot of time in involving and engaging multiple family members, and particularly investing in the next generation to be able to then bring them into the business, to be able to find a way to adapt businesses to suit the ambitions and the plans of the future generation, and to find a way that the business can continue to remain innovative, can continue to remain current as the business environment is constantly changing.
So Faham, to relate that back to your earlier analogy with the East India Company, you had this trifecta, as you call it. You got the shareholders, the board of directors, and the CEO. Often in family businesses, particularly second generation, the lines between those three are blurred, aren't they? Someone's a shareholder, they're on the board of directors. If they're not the CEO, then they're the C-something, aren't they? And that's where it gets a bit messy. Do we need to separate management from shareholders and bring in outside directors and non-executive directors?
I can speak at length about this as we're a family-owned corporate governance advisory. So I think we practice what we have to preach. what I call the shareholder chairman CEO complex is something that's not unique to family businesses. In fact, it's one of the biggest risks or biggest opportunities that we see for SMEs to work on. The separation of management and governance from the board of directors, the separation of roles, is one of the key tenets of corporate governance. I think a existence of non-executive and independent directors is the quick win that SMEs and family businesses can introduce to start practicing good governance.
So if we all agree on what family businesses should be doing, why are so few doing it? Or am I wrong in saying that perhaps more are doing it now? We're at a point we keep hearing, an inflection point, when the founders of many of these companies are, you know, they are into their 70s and 80s, so you do have succession. In your experience, Ziad, and you're from Beirut, you've been in this region on and off all your life, but you've worked around the world. Are we seeing a change at the moment?
Definitely we are. I mean, they're realizing that if they want to maintain value in the business, they have to introduce the resources that are required. Part of it is introducing other skills that they don't have. One of the issues that I always ask family businesses, if you have to make a decision as an owner, manager, do you look at your interest as a shareholder or as a manager of the business? And if the answer is, what's the difference? Then definitely you need to split the roles, because they can't see the difference between somebody who's looking after the business and somebody looking at the shareholder's interest. So yes, we see it in all the big families. It's happening in the Middle East, all across. And I think we're going to see it very soon in smaller companies who are beginning to realize we need that governance and system.
I guess certain reporting standards require that family companies open up and disclose financials more, but family groups in general tend to, when things go wrong, will close the circle. There's been a sort of, in days of lower transparency, sort of family companies, when there's a slowdown, when things go wrong within the group, they tend to sort of close down and sort of not expose that to the outside. Traditional logic says that family businesses want the bad business to stay within the family. Do you think that's changing?
I think that if in the decade of corporate governance, in the decade that I've worked in corporate governance, we really look at carrots and sticks. Sticks are the government regulations that exist predominantly for listed companies in markets. The carrots are what we need to talk about more. The carrots are the research that proves that good governance leads to growth. Good governance leads to higher valuations, and I can attest to that because I sat on the buy side due diligence, and anytime corporate governance was a failure, we knocked a few million off the valuation. So to your point, Malcolm, family businesses need to think about not the next generation, but the generation after that. And as Carla mentioned, instilling that corporate governance culture is the key to that longevity.
But do you not think that the family groups still have that sort of innate secrecy? They'll want to try and keep as much as possible close to their chest. How do you persuade people to change that?
My approach with family business is a very, very simple approach. If you fundamentally believe that your shareholders and stakeholders are the wider family, those that have a equity right to the business, you need to bring them on board. I'm not saying that you need to share that with the market, but you need to share it with your stakeholders. And the approach that we take with the older generation board of directors is to introduce a new board of directors called the shadow board of directors with the younger generation and start having them being coached on what it takes to be in the boardroom, what it takes to start making decisions at the board level.
This draws us to the end of our discussion. Lots of comments coming in, particularly about cryptocurrencies, which is where we started this discussion. Nazar writes in with several interesting points. He says, referring to cryptocurrencies and asking about an owner is like taking a cell phone and asking, where is the wire? He says, there is no owner or regulator. That's the entire beauty or flaw. Thanks very much indeed, Nazar. You make some interesting points. Pat the American writes in. He says, hi, I'm the chief finance officer for a Western-owned multinational. Cryptocurrency is another word for money laundering. It is just a matter of time before regulators ban it. Pat, thanks very much indeed. And thanks, of course, to our panel of experts this morning. First of all, to Carla Coffle, the executive director of the Pearl Initiative. Nice talking to you, Carla. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much.
To Ziad Makhzoomi, former CFO of Arabtech and CEO of Faki IVF. Ziad, always nice to see you. Thank you for joining us this morning. And Fahim Al-Kassimi, director of AQMP. Appreciate your time, Fahim.
Always good to see you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.